Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode of Silent Giants is brought to you by Ally. Ally, powered by Verizon locations, are developed by Verizon, the world's leading technology company. In collaboration with Ally, a membership-only community workspace for creators. Each location is a community curated powered by the emerging technologies and thought leadership of Verizon. With Ally, Verizon is bridging the gap between startup and corporation by helping the community workspace build next-level ecosystems for entrepreneurs. And now, onto my interview with Douglas Kirkland.
If you love what you do, whatever it is, if you're in the movie industry or the entertainment field, and you commit to it and make the most out of every opportunity, that's the beginning. But there's never any guarantee of anything, and you have to keep questioning yourself. How can I do this better and bigger?
Yeah, check it out. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Everybody tuning in, you invited. No matter what mood you in, get excited. Everybody love the music. Let me tell you how they do it. Whether writer or an agent, let me tell you how they made it. You are now talking to a silent giant. Wanna walk in their shoes, silent giants. Wanna study their moves, silent giants. Wanna know what they do, silent giants. Silent giants, y'all.
Pod bless, and welcome to another episode of the Silent Giants podcast, a podcast that highlights the superstars behind the scenes of popular culture. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. To keep up with the latest on the show, be sure to follow us on Instagram at Silent Giants Podcast. And to keep up with my life, music, and more, be sure to follow me as well at Corey Cambridge. Our special guest this episode is legendary photographer Douglas Kirkland. At age 24, he was hired as a staff writer for Look magazine and became famous for his 1961 photos of Marilyn Monroe. Douglas has photographed some of the most iconic superstars in American popular culture, like Audrey Hepburn, Judy Garland, Andy Warhol, and many others. He also did photography for some of the greatest films in movie history, like The Sound of Music, Titanic, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and many others. This introduction can't even do him justice for all the things he's achieved in his life and career. In this interview, we chat about his early start in photography. We bond over him getting his first job in my hometown of Richmond, Virginia, working with Marilyn Monroe, his experience at the Michael Jackson Thriller video shoot, and a whole lot more. So, without further ado, let me introduce you to the legendary photographer, my friend, the silent giant, Douglas Kirkland. Douglas Kirkland, it is such a pleasure having you on the podcast, my man. I'm a humongous fan of your work. I'll never forget meeting you at your book signing and realizing that my mother had given me your book for Christmas.
Wow.
So
it was a nice gift. Still one of my favorites.
Also to realize that, you know, you lived in Richmond, Virginia as well.
Yes, of course. I was Richmond before I came to New York. I was working in a photo studio in Richmond, and then I had other jobs before that as well. It was a number of steps, as you probably have experienced as well through the years.
Where did you grow up, and when did you first hear about Life magazine?
I was born in Toronto, Canada, and when I was 3 years of age, my parents moved to a small town in Canada opposite Buffalo, New York, and it was called Fort Erie, and that's where I was raised. And when I was very young, we used to get Life magazine and Look magazine, and I used to cherish sitting down with my father and going through every page with him. On the day that it came, it was Friday at lunchtime. It was at our post office, and he brought it home from his store in Fort Erie, and we went through it page by page.
Wow. When did you get your first camera?
I was only 8 years of age, and they thought until then I was not up to using the family box camera, and I still have that box camera to this day. And it was a 1/16 Brownie, as Kodak film, Kodak cameras were all called Brownies. And it was very special. And I took my first picture of the family in front of the house on a cold Christmas day. And there I was. And burned an image in my mind that has not escaped to this day. And I still have that picture, as a matter of fact.
What got you into photography?
Well, I had an uncle who had gone to Europe and was in radio and during the Second World War. And he had a camera called a Contax. And he came back from the Second World War and he had that camera with him. And that dazzled me because the year, it was the mid-40s. And here I was, a young boy, and he was my Uncle Scott, and he was a very important early step to me becoming a photographer. He was in radio, his love of photography spread to me, and he brought a Contax camera back from the Second World War, and that was a very high level of German camera, and I got just knocked off my feet by it, and I took my first picture of my mother and father in front of the house at Christmas on a cold Christmas day, with my brother Kent as well, who became a judge in Canada, and he's now retired, Kent Kirkland. And it was all very stimulating and very exciting, and that's how I got into photography. And my father would pick up Life magazine at the post office on Friday and bring it home, and we would look at it at lunchtime. And it was a small town, Fort Erie, 7,000 people at that time. And so I would go through the magazine with my father, and I just was very excited by the world that photographers lived in. And I think it was at that young age that I really had a desire to become a photographer from the age of 7 on.
Did you have any schooling for photography? And how did that bring you to New York?
At school, I went to eventually a photographic high school in Buffalo, New York. And half the day was photography and half of it was traditional schoolwork. And that was very exciting and very moving for me. And I used to take the bus across to Buffalo, about a 45-minute ride. And it was all very relaxed. And at that time, it was after the Second World War, and things were much more relaxed. And the world seemed open to me. And I went to a school called Seneca Vocational High School, and one of their subjects they taught was photography, and it was very moving. And they taught you how to light people, use floodlights, and eventually strobes, which is the traditional light today for flash, at least. And They taught us all these things, and it was very stimulating. And before I knew it, I was out of the school, and I wanted to find my way to New York. And eventually I did, and I worked with a very prominent photographer named Irving Penn. And Irving Penn worked for Vogue. And the stimulation of being around a giant like this was very moving, and it set me on a course of wanting to go to where I have been. And I've been doing this approximately 60 years now.
So you moved to New York and, you know, you're young, you're excited, but how did you get your first professional job? And what was your first professional job in photography here in the city?
My first job was photographing a wedding in Fort Erie. And my first picture I took was of my brother and parents in front of the house at Christmas time. But when I started to think professionally, I used a camera called Speed Graphic, and that had used film holders in the back of it. And when I went around our town of 7,000 people, photographing weddings and the like and children, I was very excited. And that those days, it was not strobe light, but flash bulbs and film holders, and put them in the back of that 4x5-inch Speed Graphic. And that was very stimulating. And from there, I worked my way to New York and worked with Irving Penn.
When did you first hear of Irving Penn?
I had been working temporarily at a studio in Richmond, Virginia, and I learned about him, the great Vogue photographer, and just a giant in photography. And he remains a giant to this day. And although he's long gone now, physically, he's not alive anymore. But he was a giant, and I went to him on my summer vacation from Richmond and asked him for a job. And he looked at my work, and he was kind enough to look at it. And he said at the end of, "But I have no openings." Then he scratched his head and he said, "Maybe I have an idea for you. Maybe there will be a spot in November." This was now August. "And maybe in November, there'll be a chance that somebody is here, because he may be going into the Army." And because there was a draft at that time, and he was having to go into the Army. I had had a child by that time, and I was no longer draftable. So I wasn't in the military, fortunately. And that's why I was available. And I had a son who eventually became a very well-known animator of the Simpsons television show, Mark Kirkland. Anyway, I'm rambling a little bit.
Did you work with him at Look Magazine?
He worked for Look Magazine occasionally, but he worked for Vogue and many other big magazines like that. And I went with him on location, because I did get an opportunity to work with him. He said he didn't have a job. And then just at the end of my interview with him, which I come up from Richmond, and he scratched his head and he said, "Maybe there will be something." And he thought of this young man who was going to be going into the military for a few months. And then he said, "Well, if maybe there's a chance that you could come to New York at that time." And eventually I should contact him in November. This was August, and during my vacation, I should come to New York and contact him in November. And I got that young man's job, and I learned so much, because he was a giant. He worked for Vogue, and he worked for Life magazine, and I was suddenly in the big time, and I had not seen anything like that in Fort Erie or any of the places I'd been to up until that time.
So your first big time shoot in New York City was with Irving Penn?
What I did was I was with Penn, and Rodgers and Hammerstein had come around to be photographed by Penn. And what I did, frankly, was I hid my camera and I pulled it out of a box and photographed the two of them as they were talking in an animated way about one of their new shows. And that was a picture that went into my first book, even. And I still have that picture to this day. And it's Rodgers and Hammerstein. And that was the first picture that I was at the big time. But I was published. I had different pictures published before that. And it wasn't in New York. But before I got to New York, I had a picture published of my brother, who was 70 years younger than me, and he had a baseball bat on his shoulder, and I had photographed him with a like he was a great baseball player, and that was my first published picture on the Buffalo Courier Express on Sunday. That was color, and there was my brother Kent, and you know, in our small town of 7,000 people, Fort Erie, which was opposite Buffalo, New York, it was an amazing buzz because I had put my brother Kent on the Courier Express Sunday supplement, and it was full color, and it was big, and it was beautiful.
Can you tell me more of what New York City was like at this time, and where did you first live in New York City?
I lived on Long Island. I live at the end of the subway line because I could afford to live there. Penn was not paying me. It was paying me something like $50 a week. Even in those times, that was not very much money. And I took the subway for an hour to come into work and then an hour to go home at night to Far Rockaway. And that's how I got started with Penn. And that was the only way I could afford it because he was paying me $60 a week. And I asked him for $100 a week. And he thought about it for a day or so. Then he said, I just don't think the money is in this work anymore. He more or less pushed me away. And that was discouraging, but I gained so much from being with Irving Penn, who was a Vogue photographer, and he worked for Life magazine, and that was the time that I saw the first opportunity.
You know, I'm really, really big on mentorship and, you know, seizing the moment and seizing opportunity. You know, who was the first person to give you your first shot at Look magazine?
It was in 1960. Fortunately, I was able to work, but I wanted a staff job and a big time staff job. There was a gentleman who commented to the head of photography at Look magazine, and he told them that he had met me, and I seemed to have the right stuff. And so the Look magazine called me.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
And asked me to come in for an interview, and I did, and I got that job, and I was there 11 years on that project. But they flew me all over the world because that was the big, big time in those days. And I worked with Marilyn Monroe and Coco Chanel and people like that, right to the top. And I traveled worldwide as well. So I was out, I came out to Hollywood here and worked with Marilyn, and went to Paris and worked with Coco Chanel. And that was all for Look magazine.
What role did you serve when you first got to Look magazine? And can you tell me the story of how that led to, you know, your opportunity to work with Marilyn Monroe?
I worked for the magazine. I was a staff person for the magazine. And they were having their 25th year special edition. And they suggested that maybe Marilyn was one of the people who should be in it. And the magazine was very powerful. It had a circulation of 7 million or 7 million plus every time they published. And so there was a great power there. It was a power that is hard to identify today because publications don't have that type of power. But I was working for them, and they sent me to photograph Marilyn out here in California. And I was the head of photography at Look magazine. His name was Arthur Rothstein, and he was one of the people who hired me. And he believed in me and my enthusiasm and love of photography and my ability to get along with people generally. And it was Arthur Rothstein. And he was actually a person who promoted me in the magazine. And I not only got involved in shooting movies, but then people like Marilyn Monroe, but I also got involved in fashion and work I'd seen Irving Penn doing. And suddenly, I couldn't believe it. I was in the big time. Truly, that's the bottom line there. Here I was, Douglas Kirkland from Toronto and Fort Erie, working in and traveling all over the world and shooting people like Coco Chanel. I spent time with her.
Tell me about your first interaction with Marilyn Monroe. I mean, that's absolutely amazing. Were you alone with her?
You know, the truth of the matter is, we went, two of the people who worked for the publication for Look, the local guy and the movie editor, whose name was Jack Hamilton. And we went to see Marilyn, and she said, you know, they said they had a special issue coming up and they would like to have pictures of her in it. And at the end of the hour we spent with her, she said, I know what we need. We need a bed, Frank Sinatra records, Dom Perignon champagne, and I will get into that bed with nothing but a sheet over me. I mean, the excitement I felt as a young man was unimaginable. I still feel it to this day. So here I was, the boy from Fort Erie, and I was going to be in alone with Marilyn Monroe. And shortly after she arrived at the studio I rented, she said, I want to be alone with this boy. I find it usually works better that way. Just imagine. having an opportunity to photograph Marilyn and be alone with her. And that was one of the picture stories that put me on the map, really. And to this day, those pictures are still used. And I was one of the last photographers. There were a couple of others, but I was among the last photographers to photograph her.
And so Look Magazine going out of business led to your experience and the jump over to Life Magazine.
Yes, that's correct. Look Magazine went out of business in, they were very competitive with Life, but Look went out of business about after I was there 11 years and I had established myself pretty well. And then amazingly, there were 25 photographers working with them. And astonishingly, they asked me, there were three photographers they asked if would be interested in coming to Life. Of course, I was interested in going to Life because that was even bigger than Look magazine. I mean, they had 8 to 9 million circulation each time they published. It's hard to imagine the power of that.
So tell me more about your movie experience that led you to Thriller. I am a major Michael Jackson fan. I've interviewed countless people on the podcast about their experience working with Michael, and particularly on Thriller. And, you know, you were the only photographer on set on the making of the iconic Thriller music video. Could you tell me some more information or give me a story about your experience?
I worked on a lot of movies through the years, Sound of Music and many others, and I can give you the list if you're interested. I will send them to you. In any case, I was working with Life magazine at that time, and there was some group called Special Photographers who worked on movies, and I was asked to work on Michael Jackson's Thriller, because it was going to be made, and it was going to be made in 3 days. No one had an idea that this would become such a giant film. It was obviously his last movie, last film, the last project that he did, because he died not too long after that. And so I was there on Thriller, and I was the only photographer permitted there. And I would come in at 9 a.m. and he would show up usually about 10 or 11. And we would work well into the night up until as late as midnight sometimes, just during a 3 day period. And no one knew how big Michael was at that time. They were starting, he was well known, but no one knew that Thriller would become such an amazing piece of his. And there were a lot of doubts of whether it was something that was going to be worthwhile or not. And he made it, and it almost wasn't brought out at one point because they were afraid it was too revealing of many things on Michael and the subjects who were with him.
Did you get to have a one-on-one conversation with Michael at all?
Oh, many. I talked with him all the time because we would, you know, he was not threatening. He was doing his best to make a good project. I mean, he knew, but no one knew that Thriller was going to become what it did, or no one knew that he was going to die as early as he did. And that was the first rock video, really, Thriller.
Do you remember any of those conversations or moments with Michael?
I had many conversations, but he was very relaxed with people and his friends. And he had some of his friends come out to the set, some of his best friends. And then there were people who would, the fans would arrive if they knew where he was. And they'd have to get him out of the way because they couldn't shoot with all these people around. And he was starting to gain importance, enormous importance, as he did by the end of his life.
What was it like working with him?
Michael was a star. but he didn't act like a star. He didn't have different things he wanted. He did not have excessive demands, and he was just doing a job. And he was given this job, and they weren't even sure it would work. The people who made the video, and they just did it step by step, and they had the idea of a script. They had the script was written more or less, and I knew what I was working on, and I knew that certain scenes would be better than others, and so I'd be very obviously not wanting to miss a very important scene, and sometimes they would work from 10 or 11 in the morning till past midnight, very long days. But there were only three of them, as I mentioned.
Were you around for the editing of Thriller?
I saw some parts of the video as they were making it, but I didn't see it cut. And I just remember that everyone was astonished by the magnitude of it. And I was just thinking, hey, Michael, you got a real winner here. And that was my feeling. And no one really realized what a winner it was. And that was really the first rock video that had been made. And Michael made it, and no one really knew what it was going to amount to or come to. And that is the bottom line. I mean, it was done experimentally, and he had friends that would come out the set, but they'd have to keep him from people who would discover he was at different places because there were too many fans, and they wouldn't be able to work at all if those fans were around.
Douglas, you've had an amazing career, and you've been able to shoot some of the most iconic people in American history and really document some of the biggest moments in American history. What is your proudest moment for you personally in your career?
The proudest moment of my personal career was probably working in Paris with Coco Chanel. And that changed my life because with that, I started to learn French, and I eventually met my French wife, who was Françoise Kirkland, and we've been married now for 50 years. So that was very significant. And I was working with Audrey Hepburn, actually, when I met Françoise. And I've worked on more than 200 movies through the years. And I photographed JFK, too. I've been exceedingly lucky.
And are you still working now?
Absolutely.
Where are you in your career?
I'm 82 and working every day. And I love it. I would not be any other place by a long shot. And my wife, Françoise, is very important. We've traveled together. We've worked together. I learned French with her. I didn't speak it very well until I was with her. But she speaks English very well as well. So we go back and forth.
Do you have any motive or message that stuck out to you throughout your career?
Well, if you love what you do, whatever it is, if you're in the movie industry or the entertainment field, and you commit to it and make the most out of every opportunity, that's the beginning. But there's never any guarantee of anything, and you have to keep questioning yourself. How can I do this better and bigger? I mean, I've worked all over the world. I've traveled to every continent except Antarctica, and I've been very, very lucky. I've worked with Baz Luhrmann and with a number of films of his. In fact, everything he's done since Strictly Ballroom, yes. And there were many others. So I have been very, very lucky. People have helped me. I'm sure people help you because you have a very nice manner, comfortable manner. And so it's you and I have probably have a great deal of in common.
Wow. Well, Douglas Kirkland, I am extremely honored to have you here on the podcast. I'm a humongous fan of your work. You have no idea how much it means to have you on Silent Giants. And thank you so much for your contributions to popular culture. I really appreciate you taking the time out.
I'm enjoying speaking with you. And if you have further questions, please call us.
Thank you all so much for tuning in to another episode of the Silent Giants podcast and to our special guest, Douglas Kirkland. This episode was edited by Bradley Naiman. This episode was mixed by Mark Bird. And before we get out of here, be sure to check out my other show, OPP. Other People's Podcast is America's number one discovery platform that highlights your favorite podcasters and the dope shows they created. It's pretty much the TRL of podcasting. I'll provide you the link to that in the description of this episode. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Pod bless. Till next time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.